Anyone who traveled up the Mississippi in 1100 AD would have seen it looming in the distance, a four-level earthen mound bigger than the Great Pyramid of Giza. Around it like echoes were as many as 120 smaller mounds, some topped by tall wooden palisades, which were in turn ringed by a network of irrigation and transportation canals. Carefully located fields of maize, and hundreds of red and white plastered wood homes with high-peaked, deeply thatched roofs like those on traditional Japanese farms. Located near the confluence of the Missouri, Illinois, and Mississippi rivers, the Indian city of Cahokia was a busy port. Canoes flitted across its waterfront like hummingbirds, traders bringing copper and mother-of-pearl from faraway places, hunting parties bringing such rare treats as buffalo and elk, emissaries and soldiers in long vessels bristling with weaponry, workers ferrying wood from upstream for the ever-hungry cook fires, the ubiquitous fishers with their nets and clubs. Covering 5 square miles and housing at least 15,000 people, Cahokia was the biggest concentration of people north of the Rio Grande until the 18th century. Away from the riverside, Cahokia was hardly less busy and imposing. Its focal point was the Great Mound, Monk's Mound, it is now called, named after a group of Trappists who lived nearby in the 18th and 19th centuries. Around its sides rushed a flow of men, their body paint and tattoos obscured by dust from the hardened, brick-like mud that lay underneath the entire city. Some built new mounds or maintained the old. Others hauled wood for fuel and houses, or carried water in leather pouches, or weeded the maize fields with stone hoes. Women carried stacks of woven mats, baskets of fish and produce, yowling children. Cook smoke chimneyed to the sky. Standards made of painted animal skins flapped everywhere. Anyone who has visited Siena or Venice knows how surprisingly noisy a city without engines can be. At peak times, given the right wind conditions, Cahokia must have been audible for miles. Monk's Mound opens onto a plaza 1,000 feet long. In its southwest corner is a pair of mounds, one conical, one square. One day I climbed up their grassy sides at sunset. Hardly any other visitors were there. The humped outline of the vast heap of earth emerged from the empty green like a powerful prairie ship. The sun was low and the Great Mound was casting a shadow that looked long enough to reach the Allegheny Mountains. For a moment, I saw no sign of contemporary life. St. Louis, just across the river, had not yet switched on its lights. Around me was the Mound City and nothing but the Mound City. To we moderns, the sensation of being in a constructed environment is so ubiquitous as to be invisible. In the cocoon of our strip malls and automobiles, we are like the fish that cannot feel the water through which they swim. In Cahokia's day, it was different. 1,000 years ago, it was the only place for 1,000 miles in which one could be completely surrounded by an artificial landscape. To visitors today, it seems obvious that Cahokia and the many other mound sites in the Midwest and Southeast are the remains of Indian settlements. It did not seem so clear in the past. 19th century writers attributed the mound complexes to, among others, the Chinese, the Welsh, the Phoenicians, the lost nation of Atlantis, and various biblical personages. A widely touted theory assigned authorship to Scandinavian emigres, who later picked up stakes, moved to Mexico, and became the Toltecs. The science fiction writer and archaeology buff Robert Silverberg devoted an entire entertaining book to the back and forth over the origin of the mounds, which intermittently preoccupied American intellectuals for a century.